Coming up on Wells Tech This Week, it's all about Google Apps. We'll be joined by Joe Dufour from Wisconsin Lutheran College and Jason Schmidt, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, both with hands-on experience with Google Apps. Also a sad day for Sally as Google is retiring one of her favorite tools. All coming up next on the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to episode 220 for January 25th, 2012. This is Martin Spriggs, as usual. Joining me from, it's probably snowy over in Sleepy Eye, would be my guess, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. It's snowy and icy in Sleepy Eye. Perfect. Winter has arrived.
School today, though?
Yes, we have school. We just skated in.
Okay. And speaking of school, this is our monthly focus on classroom technology. And because of that, we usually bring in a semi-regular classroom technology correspondent. This year, we're alternating between Gail Potratz up in New London and Jason Schmidt from Nebraska. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Martin. Good morning, Sally.
And where exactly are you in Nebraska, Jason?
I work at Bennington Public Schools, which is just north of Omaha. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of on the edge of the state, right smack in the middle of the country.
Okay. And Jason, you used to be a teacher in one of our Wells schools, and now you are knee deep or elbow deep in technology at the public school level. So you have lots of insights for us. And the topic of the day is Google, and specifically Google in the classroom, and basically their play there is Google Apps. And all of us have some experience with that to one degree or another. But before we jump into our conversation about it, we had the chance to chat with Joe Dufour from Wisconsin Lutheran College, and they're running a Google Summit this summer, and we thought it would be a good chance to both promote that, but also talk to Joe about his impressions of Google Apps and where this is all headed. So why don't we play that interview first, and then we'll come back and chat a little bit about it. We're very happy to have joining us once again Joe Dufour from Wisconsin Lutheran College, where he is the director of Digital Education. Thanks for joining us, Joe.
You're welcome. I'm very happy to be here.
Last time we talked with Joe, which was way back in 2009, we looked it up. You were up at Fox Valley Lutheran, one of our area Lutheran high schools. Now you're at the college level, Wisconsin Lutheran College, doing maybe some similar things, but some different things. But things have changed, too. And certainly in the area of digital learning and digital education. And one of those areas where one of the players, in the digital space that has stepped up significantly is Google. And they've created a suite now that probably really wasn't getting a lot of play the last time we spoke of in educational settings, and that's Google Apps. And one of the reasons we want to talk to you is that WLC is going to be offering a class or a summit, so to speak, this summer on that. So we thought, well, let's get Joe on to talk a little bit about that. But maybe before we jump right into that, Joe, if you wouldn't mind just sharing a little bit about yourself and educating our listeners on who Joe Dufour is.
Sure. As you said, I came from the high school level up at Fox Valley Lutheran High School up in Appleton, and that's where I specialized in multimedia and digital artwork and all things digital, and not necessarily digital education, but that naturally transitioned over to what I do now, which is I sort of oversee some of the instructional technology here on campus, and then I also oversee all of the online classes here mm-hmm. on campus. So with our adult and graduate studies and our undergraduate students, they all are filtered through me at some point if they are taking an online class. Mm-hmm. And so I work with the professors to make sure that their classes are built properly and with all of the newest technologies possible at their demand.
Sure.
Besides that, I am a professor in the education department, and I occasionally teach some instructional technology style classes.
Mm-hmm. How do you like it there?
I love it here. I love the expanse and the freedom of opening up education with technology and sort of bringing that out, rolling that out to some of the people that have clamored for it for a mm-hmm. long time but really haven't had either the wherewithal or the concentration or the I guess you might say some of the monies or some of the resources to accomplish this, and mm-hmm. now we're being able to bring this to them through the Instructional Design Center, which is what I work for. I'm the leader of the Instructional Design Center, and that's the department that helps the rest of the campus.
Okay.
Very good. And specifically, you guys are going to be offering this coming summer, this Google Education Summit, focusing on Google Apps and all the things that you can do with Google Apps in an education setting. Maybe take a step back from there and tell us about your first experience with Google Apps.
Sure. Yeah. And actually, the summit this summer is about all things Google, and that's actually how I got interested in Google Apps to begin with, was something that wasn't an app at all. Obviously, Google's search engine has been around for a long time, but Gmail, I hopped on Gmail probably 7 or 8 years ago and discovered apps through that and realized the true potential of its collaborativeness and the ability to make documents on the fly from almost anywhere about 6 or 7 years ago, and started kind of being the pioneer in Google applications both on my campus, and I believe that I even taught a class for Martin Luther College about 5 years ago that hinged completely upon or was very closely related to Google Apps. So I've really been interested in it for quite some time now.
Interesting. So now to the present day, why is WLC interested in offering this kind of course? They must see some relevance in the classroom of our educators.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said at the beginning of the show, Martin, back in 2009, Google Apps were really just getting their foothold. Mm-hmm. And now this whole culture has been built around this, and it's sort of beginning to compete with what we see in the Microsoft world. And part of that reason is because Google Apps and Google education accounts are free, which is amazing to many schools, and especially within our Wells Lutheran schools is just fantastic, because anytime something is free, it automatically has a 1 foot up on whatever they used to pay for.
Anything that's not free, so, yes.
Yeah, and even within that, like we've been saying, I mean, Google Apps isn't just Google Apps. It's so many other things. Once you have a Google account, you are able to work in so many different places. You could work with Google SketchUp. You could work with Google Presentations. You can have a Gmail account. You can even have Zoho accounts, which are more collaborative software out in the cloud. But just having that one single Google account frees you up and allows you to work in so many different ways across the board, all for free. Mm-hmm. That's one of the main drivers behind Google Apps.
Sure. So as you look at how this might be implemented in a one of our classrooms, what's the likely scenario? So you're a sixth grade teacher. You've got Google Apps available to your school. How do they use it?
Well, one of the simplest ways, one of my favorite ways to teach in some of the classes where we utilize Google applications would be something that I like to call a collaborative research project, where it used to be that we would assign students a research project and they would work in their little groups and create a PowerPoint presentation and come together in the end, but they always had to have PowerPoint, and that usually meant that they had to be at school because many parents didn't have PowerPoint, or they had to be in one of the other places to work on these things, and they would never know exactly who was doing what mm-hmm. until maybe the day before when they got back together and realized that Sammy or Johnny didn't do their work or Johnny did all the work. And the teacher would have them present. But in this way, with the CRPs, with Google Apps, we can all of a sudden assign a single topic to these different groups. But these groups, each individual from the group can work on the same exact document because that presentation is no longer prescribed to a certain computer and client. We're now talking about something that's out in the cloud that they can all access together, independent of one another and independent of what station they're at. They could be at the library, they could be at home, they could be at school, and they can all work on the same project together.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of all of this, this collaborative piece, is that this teacher can then go back in there and track exactly who did what and when. And so now we have this accountability piece, which is what we have lacked so much of in the technology and collaboration world for so many years. Now that teacher can really see what's going on behind the scenes.
Interesting.
So any downsides to using Google Apps? Have you run across glitches or problems as you've introduced this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's always glitches with, especially the more free the software is, the more glitchy it sometimes seems to be. Thank goodness Google does have pretty expendable resources, and they have a fairly user-friendly and glitch-free system. But obviously, there are problems with some of the online editing tools. Things may go wrong, and students may not have things available to them, their tools or whatnot. Their toolbar may look different from one day to the next because it's that morphing software, because it's in the cloud. It isn't something they've downloaded to their computer, which also brings me probably to the largest of all the problems, which is unless you have or download the Google Docs for offline, you have to rely on a Wi-Fi or some sort of network connection in order to get to your documents, which could be troublesome if your school doesn't set up their network correctly or doesn't have the offline capabilities for their students, because you could easily find yourself kind of floundering, not being able to get to that document.
Right.
But with good network connection, good Wi-Fi setup, and a good structure to your IT and plan in place, you can alleviate almost all of those problems.
Yeah, a couple, I think it was 2 weeks ago, Kurt Gosdek shared a voicemail with the show and talked about his experience when his ISP went down for a day. And there's absolutely nothing you can do about that. And you're kind of dead in the water. So you always have to have a plan B. You can't have every egg in that basket. But I would say in general, most of our ISPs are fairly reliable. The breakdown is going to be in, you know, equipment failure or routing issues that are, you know, on our local campuses. Because obviously we don't have professionals necessarily managing those networks, at least not professional technicians. So you make the best, you make do with the best that you can. But that certainly is something that you want to be aware of.
I'm curious, Joe, if that techie side of things, like all the setup and everything, is covered at your Education Summit this summer, or is it more focused on applications and that kind of thing?
No, we have sessions that should cover just about everything you can imagine. What we're looking for is when people get through this fifth day, through this week-long huge summit, that they could come out and invariably be Google Education certified or Google Trainer certified, sorry. So they could just go by and take the three or four tests that they have to take online, actually maybe five now, and become certified in Google Training, because we should have taught them just about everything they need to know about setting up the accounts, administering the accounts, and then using them for educational purposes as well. And we're discussing things, not just the apps, but the calendars and the Google Groups and Google Sites and the whole gamut.
Awesome.
So what's the setup for this this summit? Is it all day for 5 days? Is it a morning, an afternoon? How is it going to work, and do they need to bring their own equipment?
It is absolutely all day long. We plan to wear people out until they want to drop at the end of the day.
Okay.
It's because we have so much content to give them. We plan to keep them the entire day. We even have nighttime events for them to take part in, including the free Pacino night, where they can have as many free cappuccinos and lattes that they want to try and work on their projects.
Well, they'll need it.
exactly. And we also have field trips down to Discovery World, where we're going to use their multimedia labs to work with Google applications. And the entire thing, the whole summit is based around the transformative nature. We want people to come in with a unit plan or a project or something in mind, and when they come out, they should have YouTube videos and a Google site and everything that coalesces together to deliver this content now and to assess their students in a brand new way, a very technologically driven way. And to answer your last question about do they need to come prepared, Well, they need to come with their unit plans or something in mind about what they want to transform in their educational lives. But as far as the technology piece, well, everyone that shows up to the or attends the summit gets their own free Google Chromebook. So they don't even need to bring a laptop or anything. We will provide that for them and get them up and running and show them how to use it and show them how to transform their education through that piece and through all the new tools that they're learning about.
Okay. I assume there still is space for that?
There are a few spaces left. Honestly, we opened it up and it almost filled immediately, amazingly. So we're working on trying to hold a few spots for some select people, and we might even have some sort of registration or post-registration where people can be in a waiting list and even apply to be in there and write us a letter or something like that so that we can consider them.
Okay, interesting. Sounds like high demand and good stuff.
Yes. And I forgot to mention this part. You get 3 graduate credits when you're all done as well, which is pretty good.
Nice. Okay. As you look at maybe in general at the educational technology space, any emerging trends out there, anything you're interested in doing a little more research on and keeping your eye on?
Yeah. I mean, I always love keeping my eye on things, but I think one of the things that's been around for quite some time but really has not caught on too terribly well, and I think if we look back at my interview from about 3 years ago, we might find that I was talking about the same thing at the time, but the virtual learning spaces where we're not necessarily talking about Second Life in this nature, but we're talking more like the simulation and the virtualization of education where you can attend a class, not just online, but you can actually interact with people, whether it's with your voice and a video of yourself or whether if it's an actual avatar of yourself. More of that virtualization of education. I really like focusing on and considering and thinking about that. And that ties very much into the whole gamification of education as well, just having those games, those simulations that are readily available in those virtual environments. And that has spurred on something else in the learning management side. This is my online learning side, which is adaptive learning management systems, where depending upon who you are and how you learn, you may be taken down different paths so that it's not a one-size-fits-all.
Gotcha.
And we're seeing more and more of these learning management systems that are called adaptive learning management systems, where people can kind of pick their path to how they want to get to their end goal.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, you see a little bit of that in bits and pieces and different things. Like they've seen that, you know, something like that in Khan Academy stuff, and it's a little bit smarter as far as you know how well you're performing, and then you know maybe where you need to work on things, and it'll take you down a different path. So interesting, very interesting. Yeah. Joe, thank you very much. We will make the information available on the summit on our show notes page, and blessings on your work there on the summit. Sounds like very beneficial stuff.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for spending the time with me, and thank you for sharing the information about the Google Education Summit. Absolutely. We really appreciate it, and God's blessings to both of you as well.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Our thanks to Joe for joining us once again. He was on the show, I think, previously. And lots of good stuff going on at WLC, especially in the area of Google Apps. And all that summit information, Sally, we're going to put in the show notes, right?
They actually have a Google site, believe it or not,
What are the chances of that?
Yeah, so we'll definitely have a link to that in the show notes. Sounds like a really exciting place to be this summer. If there's still room, you know, maybe some of our listeners want to jump in on that opportunity.
Very good. So, Jason, you down in Bennington have been looking at Google Apps and doing some implementing even. How's it going for you? How are you using Google Apps down there?
Well, we use it at a couple of different levels here. One of the ways that we use it is with teachers and administration parts of the way that our district runs. This coming fall, we're going to be opening up a new building. And with that process, we have we already have an administrator hired, and we've got a core team of teachers, and they have a lot of different things that they need to do to get ready for that. Planning a manual and doing the community communications and, you know, things like picking up furniture and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So what they are using it for is they are using Google Docs and a Google site, actually, to kind of collaborate on all of those things so they don't have to meet quite so often. Typically, when we open up a building, teachers need to meet, that core team needs to meet about once a week, and they're down to about once a month right now. So that has been really helpful just from an administration and a planning side with things. The tools that they have available in Google have been really helpful for them.
Maybe before we get too much further into the conversation, Joe talked obviously about what Google Apps is, but from my vantage point, Google Apps is a collection of Google products kind of packaged together in a more seamless and more manageable way for schools. There's Google Apps for education, there's Google Apps for nonprofits. And the educational component, one of the features that I think makes this a real viable option is the ability to manage user accounts and the things that they can do, the things that they can see, the apps that are available to them, especially when you pair this up with devices like Chromebooks in particular, makes this, I think, a fairly easy platform for a school administrator or a technology administrator, even if they are part-time in that capacity, to manage. Jason, has that been your experience, or Sally, you too?
Well, I was just thinking it might be fair to even call it an intranet type of tool, internal website, basically. And that website makes use of all the different Google tools that kind of seamlessly allowing document sharing and wikis and image sharing or whatever it might be that you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would kind of agree with Sally on that. You know, that idea of you can really easily manage all of the users and set their permission levels and all of those kinds of things. And it's really actually, you know, Google doesn't win very many design awards.
No.
You know, their stuff doesn't look really nice, but man, is it functional. You know, it's really, we have about 500 people in our organization right now, and that number grows every day. I'm primarily the person who takes care of it, and I might spend 15 minutes a day on it. I mean, it's not really a very difficult system to work in at all. And the for what you get and what you pay for it too, you know, you can't really beat the way that this works out.
Sure. For our listeners, this is primarily a tool or a product for our organizations with schools. About a year or so ago, Google made a decision that they weren't going to offer this for free for churches. You have to kind of sign up for the business account. Even though they have one for nonprofits, religious organizations, they aren't classifying as nonprofits, and I think that's more a political thing than anything else. But the good news is if you have a preschool or an elementary school connected to your church, you can, I think, pretty easily get an account. And also, just in my experience, even if you have other website products like Final Web or something like this, this is very complementary to that, as Sally mentioned. You could just run your email through this, your intranet kinds of things, just run it for faculty or whatever, and works really well. And essentially, you have unlimited users. They start you out with a number of users, but all you have to do is ask for more, and it's essentially granted. And then you manage your domain with the built-in tools.
A good example of email might be that you want each of your students to have an email account, but you don't want to go, open that up to the whole world of possibilities with things they could get emailed about or whatever. So you can have really strict controls on that they can only use their email to email their teachers and not even other students.
Right.
You can put in all kinds of different controls there.
Mm-hmm. Jason, you want to go?
And that's really what makes it viable in education. You know, we have all of those federal laws that we need to comply with, you know, child information privacy and that kind of stuff. And being able to restrict that really makes Google an option.
Mm-hmm. What other ways are you using it there, Jason?
We also have been, I have been teaching some sixth grade classes using Google products. We started out the year, we went into Docs and did a few things with that. And then they moved on to presentations, and lately we've been working in Sites. And that has been really a lot of fun to see. You know, the kids are really excited and having a great time with it, and they are getting the concept. You know, I have a lot of kids in there who don't have a computer at home and don't have access to it at home. And the only exposure they get at school is at school.
Mm-hmm.
And with just a little bit of guidance, they're able to pick up on it and do the things that they need to do. So it's been really a lot of fun to see how they do that.
So they're basically creating their own websites, like embedding videos, adding images, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Google makes all of those things really easy to do. Their editor is very intuitive and very well designed, and everything is pretty much two or three clicks and you get what you need to do. So you don't have to, if you want to embed a video from YouTube, you don't have to know HTML, you don't have to grab the code, all you have to do is grab the link, and the software does the rest of it. So, you know, it's, like I said, it was just took a little bit of training on my part with the kids, but then they pretty much just took it and run with it.
Mm-hmm. So there's a group of 12-year-olds that are into self-publishing now. That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to see.
Very good. You have teachers that are using it as well with classroom projects?
I do have some honors English, an honors English teacher who is going to be using Google Docs for her students' writing portfolios this year. She has them, they're all in there, they're all set up, and they'll write their documents, and then they share it with her, and she'll leave comments on them. And that's really nice for her to be able to do that, because the writing becomes more of an evolutionary process than, you know, you finish it and you submit it and then you get your grade. She won't put the grades in their documents, but rather she'll put those comments in and give them a certain amount of time for them to respond. So they can respond to her comments, or they can make changes and resolve those comments and kind of check them off, or they can just ignore them, and then, you know, that's fine too. So it's been really neat. The little that she's used it so far, really likes it, and it's a really neat thing to see the kids go through that process of revision and editing and those kinds of things. So that's been really cool.
My wife had an interesting experience last week. They're just getting into Google Docs. We installed it over Christmas, Google Apps, and so everybody's, you know, email was transferred, and, you know, that was a whole project in and of itself, although not difficult, just time-consuming. But they're just beginning. She's just beginning to explore Google Docs, so she's having her students submit assignments. She's an eighth-grade English and language arts and literature teacher. And it just so happened that one of her students shared the assignment before it was done, which you can do. I mean, you can share it at any point. So she could go in and actually see him working on the document. And she had an ongoing conversation through chat with the student who was actually in homeroom, you know, doing on a break, doing his homework. And she was correcting grammar and giving him hints. And, you know, it was kind of a real-time experience, even though they weren't in the same room at the same time. And, yeah, that's kind of amazing to me, where you can get that kind of level of help, you know, on occasion if you need it. In the right within the writing process, there's just that's something obviously that you'd have to be in the same room at the same time, and you know, not always convenient to do that. So lots of possibilities there, because you can actually see in real time what's going on within a shared document.
Yeah, and it's without leaving the document too. So,
right in line, in context. Yeah, for sure.
Right.
I think Miss Carolyn Gwynn, my high school English teacher, maybe is freaking out right now. That's kind of blows your mind, doesn't it? The abilities that they have to make use of this software. Jason, you had one more neat plugin that you're making use of called Flubaru. Can you tell us about Flubaru?
Yeah, well, they're in with Google Forms. I have been using that for kind of informal assessments with kids for a really long time. And there is a kind of a labor-intensive way of making it so that it's a self-correcting kind of a form. So it'll score everything and correct it and give you a total at the end, and then you don't have to go through multiple choice and true and false kinds of things that you don't, you know, you can, it's easier to manage that amount of data that's coming in. But I came across the service that's called Flubaru, and what it basically does is it's a script that runs in the Google spreadsheet, and then it will self-correct everything for you. So you can have kids take a quiz using Google Forms, and it'll submit everything into the spreadsheet and then score it for you. So you don't have to go through and pick all of the true or false or the multiple choice answers that are correct. So saves you a lot of time on the bookkeeping end of things if you wanted to use Google Forms for some of those kinds of assessments.
And Flubaru is a free script or free tool?
Yeah, it is a free tool. You can really easily install it. You need to install it on the spreadsheets that you're using it for. I do have an example of it. If you go to flubaru.com, you can find it there too. I copied the resources that I used to train my sixth graders on how to create a site in Google Docs, and there are some spreadsheets in there that we can make available to people and have them take a look at it and see how it works.
Nice.
Very cool. Thanks for sharing that sample site. And you had another recommended site of lesson plans from Google Apps for Education that we want to make sure we include in the show notes as well.
Yeah, Google is really good about putting these tutorials together and suggested use cases and best practices. And I think they're really trying hard. Part of this, I think, came out of the whole Chromebooks initiative, is they're trying to get, you know, obviously these into classrooms. And some of the tools around that, and they use obviously YouTube and those kinds of things to do educational videos and training videos and the like. I found that to be the case when we upgraded at Peace in Hartford to the new email and Google Apps in general. There were a lot of help resources. I did want to mention that too, that those schools that are maybe thinking about this, we found it a pretty seamless process to get everybody's email transferred from FinalWeb over to Google Apps, and we have a lot more flexibility with Google Apps. But you still have the ability to work with existing tools. So if you like Outlook, for instance, there are tool syncing tools that will allow you to continue to use Outlook and Gmail together so that it will sync and you'll have local copy. You don't even have to do IMAP. It just keeps everything in sync. And it kind of acts as an Exchange server. Those of you that manage the technology and have Microsoft products in your shop know that that can be a difficult thing. But Google Apps kind of acts as that in-between kind of pseudo Exchange server where you can do calendar sharing and scheduling of meetings with meeting invites and see free busy times, you know, on the calendar because it syncs with the Google Apps calendar, and then Gmail basically becomes your web client. So you always have your email, whether you're on your Outlook or whether you're on Gmail. So very good experience for us, and they really walk you step by step through that stuff. So it's been a good thing.
We should probably contrast or maybe move into news and tech because we have education news and tech this week that is in total contrast to this whole conversation we've been having this morning. And that's news from
Apple's
the Apple
response,
front.
Yes.
Yeah. And Apple announced their e-textbook project that will allow people with the author software on any Mac computer to create interactive digital textbooks. And obviously, you know, the eye is toward education. The caveat is that these digital textbooks work on iPads, and they don't work on Chromebooks. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of a rub there, Martin. What do you think of that?
And I found that they don't work on just any iPad. I've got the first-gen iPad, and some of the textbooks that they have out there, the samples, don't run all that well. So iPad 2, I would say. Also, the iAuthor or iBooks Author tool only runs on Lion, so you have to have the latest OS X operating system. Although I will say, and I have been working with the software, and it is pretty cool. You can do a lot of things, and I've created, and I'm working on an iBook myself of a white paper I did on websites and missions. And lots of tools. You can embed video. You can have quizzes. You can have slideshows, all kinds of interactive stuff. So it's a very cool tool. But as you said, Sally, the caveat is iPad only. So it really does restrict your audience. I wrote a blog post over the weekend on Chromebooks versus iPads. And I guess I don't see a lot of our elementary schools ending up, or parents at that level ending up, the $500-$600 necessary to buy an iPad just to run these virtual textbooks. As nice as that would be, because I think it does enhance the learning experience and would be very engaging for the kids. I see great, great potential there. But I think you can obviously see where Apple's headed with this. They want people to buy iPads, and I'm just not sure, that works as well. I think Chromebooks are a better sell at this point. You can spread the payments out, and I think there's some advantages to kind of having that open environment where you can, go to the web versus locking in, to something, like Apple. But where are you guys, Jason, in your one-to-one computing initiatives, and what do you think about this whole iPad thing or this e-books thing?
In some ways, it's very compelling, and in other ways, it's missing a few things too.
Right.
We're looking at a textbook. When we adopt a textbook, we do it for 7 years.
Right.
And this would make a lot of sense actually for us to go with an iPad for something that we would normally update in 7 years, because as the company releases updates, then those textbooks also get updated.
Yep. It's supposed to be $15 or less, so you can kind of do the math, but you kind of have to build in the cost of the iPad into that too.
Right, exactly. So it would take us a little while to realize those savings, but once we would do that, then there would be some pretty significant that could be a really huge thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But at the same time, I'm kind of leery. We're not an Apple district. So we don't really have the infrastructure in place to support those kinds of things yet.
Right.
So it would represent a pretty significant investment regardless. The other part of it is we're pretty heavily invested into Moodle right now, and it works pretty well on an iPad. But we kind of, in our situation, it's more like pick your pony and ride it, of a thing.
Yep.
There are so many different things that we could do, but we can't do all of them.
Yeah, how Apple would respond to kind of the Moodle argument would be, well, you can do a lot of that through iTunes U, and I don't have a lot of experience with iTunes U, and especially with some of these new tools they're rolling out with, note sharing and that and syllabi and those kinds of things, but I doubt that it's up to that same level, that Moodle provides. The other thing is iPads are pretty breakable, I think. Put them in the hands of a fourth grader, I'd be nervous about that. Sally, what do you think?
Yeah, actually, I had an experience this weekend. We were at a basketball game, and a couple of kindergartners came over and kind of commandeered my iPad, and I was holding my breath, They totally get it, and they're not afraid of it, like a lot of people might be, but they are not real careful, They're little, yeah, definitely. I think that by Apple making this move, it opens up everyone to think this way. And so we're just on the cutting edge of this kind of technology,
and you're
going to see more and more of it develop for Chromebooks or for other platforms.
And this is, I think, good regardless of Apple's approach. I think electronic textbooks are the present or the near future, and there's a lot of value in that, just like encyclopedias have gone, you know, the way of the dinosaur. The good part of that is the content remains fresh. You're not stuck with something that can't be updated. Sally, you had a sad day over the weekend with this next piece of news.
I did. I got an email this weekend that said my friend Picnic is closing. And this ties in with our conversation, too, because it's Google's fault that it's closing.
Google purchased Picnic a while back.
Yep. Sadly to hear. And I just kind of saw the writing on the wall just a little bit, that there wasn't as much development there as there had been in the past and stuff. They're shifting Picnic tools over to Google Plus, basically. Mm-hmm. So in Google Plus, there's something called Creative Kit, mm-hmm. and a lot of those fancy things that you could do with your images on Picnic will now be available there on Google Plus. So they're not losing the brain power that went into Picnic, but they're making it a more targeted tool and trying to drive traffic to Google Plus, I would assume. Mm-hmm. So April 19th is the magic date. If you're a premium customer, you'll get your money back. And they made it real easy for you to export whatever images you have saved out there on Picnic. But I've been reading and trying to find what the Picnic replacement is. And so far, I haven't seen anything real emergent that has the same kind of tools that Picnic did and with the same fun and easy interface that Picnic offered.
They did make it fun. And the Creative Kit, you can see that that's Picnic yet, too. It's mm-hmm. got that engine behind it. But it doesn't have all the tools. But I think they'll be advancing that because they really – you can see Google's strategy just – you know, it's pretty transparent, just like Apple's strategy with iPads. They want to drive people to Google+. They want people with Google accounts. They want your pictures. They want your content. So – that's where it goes. So, all right. Actually, Aviary is probably an alternative if you are needing to find, if you don't want to go the Google Plus route. Aviary has some good online image editing tools. They have a whole suite. Picnic was kind of just picture focused, but Aviary has audio tools and those kinds of things as well. So you may want to take a look at that. Shall we move on to our picks of the week?
So,
Jason, you are our guest, at least a semi-regular guest. We'll let you lead things off. What's your pick of the week?
Sure. Well, keeping in the Google kind of vein of things, mm-hmm. I picked Google Cloud Connect for Microsoft Office. What this is an extension that you actually install into a Word or PowerPoint or any part of the Office suite, and what it does is it kind of adds that collaborative aspect to your Office documents. So let's say you're working on something in Microsoft Office. You can sync that file with your Google Apps account and share it from there with other people, and then if you make a change to it, it'll update on theirs the next time that they open it up. Because it'll sync everything with what's on Google's website.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of similar to the way that Dropbox works, but it's right there inside Microsoft Office. So it's kind of a neat little tool that I've been kind of playing with lately. And but some people, you know, if you're not quite ready to make the complete and total jump into Google Docs, this might be a good way to transition yourself into that.
That's a good pick. I tried that way back when it was in beta. I suppose it's out of beta by now, but it does work.
With Google, you never know.
Yep. And it does work pretty well. I don't think you have real time, so it doesn't work in the sense like Google Docs was, where you can see somebody editing the same document, but it does sync and then will track changes. So it'll ask you, you know, do you want to keep this or keep that? So it does allow people who prefer to work in Office to still use the cloud storage that is Google Docs and keep everything in sync. So I think there's some good stuff here for people who want to still play in that Word environment.
Right.
Sally, how about yourself?
my turn. And this weekend I was looking for some videos on YouTube, and it reminded me of how handy saving playlist is. So I thought that would be a good pick for our listeners. I'm not sure if we've talked a lot about this on the show in the past, but one of the features of your YouTube account, if you actually sign in and have an account on YouTube, is that when you find videos that you like, you can save them to playlist, and you can create as many of these playlists as you want. You can title them however you want. I have some playlists for favorite music videos versus craft videos versus education videos versus health related videos, whatever the topics may be that you want to use to organize your videos. And from an education standpoint, you could build playlists for your classroom usage or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the neat thing is that there's an ability to share a link to your playlist. So if you want to send people to a group of videos on YouTube, this is one easy way to do that. Mm-hmm. And what I'll have for everyone in the show notes is links to all the help information about YouTube playlists. And then I'll also share a link to one of my playlists so you can see what it would look like if you were to share a link to a playlist. So just a little extra stuff from YouTube as we find more and more great content available there.
Staying with the Google theme, too.
Definitely.
yeah, I saw this in action. Peter Iles, who we interviewed a couple months ago at Grace in Oshkosh, I went up there and observed his classroom for a day because they were using Chromebooks, staying with the Google theme. And he was using YouTube playlists to play music, not the the videos, but there are some just audio ones that have static images. For time when the kids were working on their Chromebooks, just doing exercises or whatever, he would play, soundtracks or those kinds of things, just as kind of background music. And the kids really enjoyed that. So he'd play, the theme from Gladiator or whatever, Braveheart, that kind of stuff. But all of that was on a playlist that he had, playlists that he had put together on YouTube. So a lot of stuff there that you really don't realize is there. YouTube just has a ton of audio and video.
Definitely.
My pick of the week is not a Google product. It is for smartphones, and it's called Card Cloud. One of the old school ways of sharing information, if you are attending a conference or business trip or whatever, is to hand out a business card. It would make sense maybe to digitize that process, and that's what Card Cloud does, both for iPhone and Android smartphones. It's a little service that you build your own business card with, and when you meet somebody, you just ask for their email address, and you email them essentially your card, your digital business card. And it shows a little picture, the social networks you belong to, websites, email address, street address, anything that you really want to share, phone number, those kinds of things. So they get a little email with this information. But beyond that, they also get a little map. So they now have a little history of where you met. That's sometimes an important part of tracking some of these business cards that you get. Well, where did we meet? What's our connection? So using the geolocation services within today's smartphones, it also says, well, you met here. And has a little dot on a map saying, well, you met in Sleepy Eye, or you met in Omaha, or you met in Milwaukee, and that kind of connects the person with the event or location where you actually exchanged business cards. So, free, works on, like I say, iPhone and Android, cardcloud.com.
Martin, I'm looking at the Card Cloud that you sent me, mm-hmm. reminiscing about where we met at the Senate Administration Building. And I see that there's also an attachment to the email that was sent that's
a VCF, right.
So that you can actually save it right into your Outlook or whatever contact list. Mm-hmm. So it has a lot of features. Very nice pick.
It is. Let's move on then to community feedback.
Sure. And this week, we actually are going to circle back with our friend Kirk Gosdick, who's got a one-to-one initiative going on with netbooks in his school in Keewaskum. And you have some more audio to share from Kirk and how it's going up there.
I do. This is part two of a voicemail that he left us a couple weeks back. So here is Kurt's voicemail, part two.
Hi, Martin and Sally. I was just talking about the flipping my classroom, and that doesn't mean turning my desk upside down. What a flipped classroom is students watch a lecture at their own pace and begin to do the lesson, and then as the teacher, I can take more time with students one-on-one and answer their questions, move along and around the room and give some individual instructions. So I've done this with a few of my third grade math lessons. The students come in the morning and they usually have a problem of the day and some review. So I record that with my smart notebook recorder, and then I also record the lesson. So they are able to go through that. I ask my students what they thought of this concept, and most of them approved of it. There was one that was a little unsure, as it we've only done it twice. What they liked was that they were able to go back and view the video over and over in case they missed something or forgot something. They also enjoyed the fact that I highlighted the important parts and worked through some problems with them. And then they were able to listen to it, too. So they have that saved on their netbook, and in case they want to run into problems or difficulties, they can always go back and view that. So I would say that I am playing around with that a little bit, and as the year moves along, I hope to do a little bit more of that type of flipping. I also will be mentioning that and demonstrating some of that when it comes to the Wells Leadership Conference this summer. So you'll have to check out my sectional. So, happy 2012 to both of you, and I will try and update again on 1-1 computing in March or April. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Kurt. As always, we really appreciate voicemails. 405 for Wells. That's 405-367-9357. If you have something to promote, like a sectional you're doing, call us, and we'd be happy to play it. We just have thoughts to share. Jason, I know you have to run. You are a busy man. You've got responsibilities there in Nebraska. So we're going to let you head out. Really appreciate you taking the time with us today. How can people find you on Twitter?
They can find me at JasonSchmidt123 on Twitter, or, you know, pretty much anything else, you know, Google Plus or LinkedIn or whatever. That's my handle.
Very
so
good.
You can find me there pretty much anywhere.
Okay. Take care. Blessings. And we'll circle back with you at a future Classroom Technology Focused podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Mm-hmm. Sally, we have some more feedback to go through, however.
We do. A couple of links from our DIGO group where you can add links that are of interest to the listening community. And we heard from Randy Dempson this week, and he shared several different links. One is How to Predict the Future of Technology, an article from Scientific American. And I got a kick out of this. It basically said, be very careful and don't talk about things that are going to have a demise, but look at things that are going to be new and that kind of thing. Interesting read. He also shared a link, an example link of a nonprofit going with Google Apps. And this is actually a reading foundation, I believe. And just a little bit about their experience using Google Apps. And I had that link up, and I'm not finding it now, but we'll definitely include the link in the show notes. I was going to tell you which nonprofit it was. The Great Books Foundation. So a good example of how they implemented Google Apps there. And then finally, a Chrome plugin for snoozing your email. So you can tell your email to wait 15 or 20 minutes if you don't want to be disturbed by it. Check out this Chrome plugin, and it works with your Gmail, I believe.
Very good.
And then, Martin, you shared a link in the DIGO group as well.
Yeah, this is a little tool that I came across recently. I don't know, maybe we've mentioned it on the show before. It's called Screener, S-C-R-E-E-N-R, so I'll leave out the E. And basically, it's a screencast tool where you can record screencasts, you know, the what you're doing on the screen. You can add audio narration to it and then upload it to their servers. It's a free service. They have a premium account if you want a longer screencast and to add some other features. But basically, it works right within the browser. There's really nothing to install or download. Works on Mac or PC. You just launch the screener recorder function, and whatever's on your screen, it captures and uploads. And if you have a reason to share that, and you know, Sally, both you and I have frequently used these kinds of tools, whether it was formerly Jing or other tools from Camtasia or whatever. These are great ways to either show somebody how to do something or show somebody what problems you're having with their software or website. So a great little tool. And I think the pro version allows you to make some of these private. So you can have a closed group of, you know, training videos or whatever. The free version, I think everything's public. So just keep that in mind as you try it. But worth a try if you have a need for something like this.
Absolutely, Martin. A picture is definitely worth a thousand words. And sometimes it's a lot easier for me to record a two-minute video to show someone how to do something than it is to try and write it out or give them screenshots or whatever.
Yeah.
You mentioned Jing. That's a downloadable free product that you run on your computer locally as opposed to Screener actually running in the browser.
Right.
As I was listening to Kurt, I was thinking about how easy it is to create videos. He talked about doing it with his smart recorder.
Yeah, I noticed that. I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, but you can also do it on your iPad if you have one using TechSmith's new Screen Chomp software.
Screen Chomp.
So, lots of different ways to make screencast type recordings. And, it, you know, I think people need to get over the barrier of that and give it a try because it's super easy and just a really effective way of communicating
information. And it sure beats, you know, 20 steps. You know, click here, you should see this, click that, you know, type in here. What a pain. You just need to do it once and watch, you know, have somebody watch you do it. And I think maybe not everybody's like this, but I certainly would prefer to watch somebody do it than to read laboriously through instructions, which I will invariably screw up somehow because I'll skip one or I'll not quite connect what they're saying with what I'm seeing on my screen. I think this is a great tool.
Absolutely. So if you have a favorite screencasting tool or some screencast examples you want to share with us, be sure to write in to Wells Tech.
Wells Tech at Wells.net, WellsTech.Wells.net. We're on Google Plus at this point, and Facebook, Twitter, all those things, all from our show notes page.
We're on Google Plus. Maybe I should try it to edit some images. I'm feeling so sad about Picnic.
Picnic was your friend.
It was.
No more as of April 19th. So.
That's right.
Okay. Next week, Sally, we are starting a brand new feature. And that will actually be the focus of the show, what we're calling the seven best. Seven is that perfect number, 7 days of creation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we are picking the seven best digital Bible study tools. So if you have a nominee to make our list of the best seven, please use one of those commenting channels that we just shared with you. And we would love to consider that. And maybe if it makes the cut, we'll put it on our seven best. But I'm looking forward to this show, Sally. It's the first time we've done something like this. And the internet, I find, is all about lists, you know, top tens, top whatever. And I enjoy them because it really distills down kind of the best of, and somebody's taken the time to do the research. And that's good news for me.
I agree, and I'm looking forward to our interview next week with Pastor Stephen Daly, who's a digital kind of guy. He's the pastor at Petra in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota, and an active listener and participant in our Wells Tech community, and he's going to give us the digital Bible study tool pastor's perspective, so that should be a fun interview.
So tune in next week for all of that. Let's close the show with the music of Cross to Glory. the song You Know, I Know from the album Life's Song. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Please tune in next week.
You know when I sit and I rise, you know me complete. You know all I've said and I've done. You know what I think. You've known me since I was a child, from inside the womb. My days will not pass from your eyes, so where can I go? You'll always know. Now I know your grace. I know your loving face. I know your word is true. So I'll praise you. You know all the secrets I keep, my hopes, dreams, and fears. You know all the pain that I mean, all my tears. You know the faith in my heart, my trust in you. You promised to never depart, so where can I go? You'll always know. Within, you know that I needed your son, his life and his cross. In him I will always be known, so where can I go? You'll always know. So I